Hello, and welcome to another episode of In the Margins. My name is Eli, and here with me today is Anthony. Anthony is a self-taught writer, daydreamer, and yet another victim of university. With his 2 minutes of daily free time, he writes fan fiction and wonders how exactly people get things done all the time. He's currently studying computer science and likes to discover the hidden truths of the universe by staring at a wall of math equations when he has a moment. How you doing?
I'm feeling ready.
You're feeling ready. Mm-hmm. It's like SpongeBob. I'm ready. Promotion.
That's exactly what I was thinking in my head, too.
Whenever we do that in my family, whenever someone says they're ready, I can't not hear that.
The effect of SpongeBob has changed us all, truly.
It has. It's actually kind of funny how, like, if you talk to anyone who was raised in Canada as a child, I say, as if you would be raised in Canada at another age, you know about SpongeBob, probably, most likely, around our age, and it's just funny that it's, like, such a widespread thing compared to, like, maybe other common knowledge that isn't quite so common.
And I do think that that's a valuable thing for a culture to have. Not in our media, because...
Children's shows about sponges?
Yeah. But also things that literally everyone knows. It's not quite well utilized in media, because if you want to reference SpongeBob, you either have to do it in, like, a small way or get the license. But outside of media, the fact that everybody knows a thing, it's pretty convenient for jokes and for a lot of things. Gosh, I need to stop making hand motions. They're just redundant.
No, I feel you. When I do this podcast all the time, I'm such a hand talker, which you may or may not have noticed through some of our calls together. But, like, my hands go all over the place, and I'll be, like, nodding or drawing on my desk with my hands, and I'm like, wait, you have no idea what I'm doing. So.
I relate to that.
Yeah, I've seen you use your hands before when you talk. So, we're here to talk about writing, and, yeah, just writing, I think.
And a little bit of SpongeBob.
And a little bit of SpongeBob. Actually, if you want, we can talk about SpongeBob, because it's a national, I would say, multinational phenomenon. And we could talk about the writing and the significance of SpongeBob, if you want.
Gosh, I need to have a lot more opinions on SpongeBob, then. I think
make up some opinions right now. SpongeBob. I thought you were going to say you have to get some more coffee first.
No, more water, on brand, and good hydration.
That's a good plan. Just like SpongeBob, somehow drinking water under the sea.
Yeah.
That's
gosh, so many of those jokes we didn't notice. There's a lot of, like, the obvious ones were, like, campfires, but there's a lot of things that we didn't notice.
Yeah, I loved it when they had the campfire. They were like, huh, why is this going out? Or, I actually hated SpongeBob as a kid, because I didn't like it when people fought. So whenever SpongeBob and Patrick or SpongeBob and Squidward got in a fight, I would cry and I would leave the room.
All right, this is where I have opinions.
Oh, okay.
That is me as well. I just have legitimate difficulty when things are too intense, and this is intense on my scale. So this means that if I'm going to watch a show and the like two buddy cops or whatever have, like, a disagreement, I enter, like, all right, let's get through this mode, where I do a lot of pausing, standing up, stretching, or coming back to it, pausing, fidgeting a bit, coming back to it, pausing, daydreaming.
I get that. Like, I wonder if it's because we're both kind of hyper-empathetic. It's like, I can handle it in reality TV shows for some reason, but cartoons, apparently I relate to cartoons a lot more than actual people.
I have actually no clue if it's because of hyper-empathy. That's just, I don't have enough data to make the assessment, but it feels right. And yeah, sometimes it even happens in situations where, like, I very, very distinctly cannot relate, and it makes it worse. Like, have there ever been main characters of shows that you just can't relate with?
Pretty much all of them, to be honest with you.
Fair.
Pretty much every character I've come across, I can't really relate much to.
Hmm.
Fun fact. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it's almost worse when they're in a situation where you know you would never be in, because you either have the more social smarts or common sense to not do the thing.
Like, yeah. Or because fiction is kind of played up reality, that this situation has just gotten a little bit away from what's realistic. Or it's happening to people far outside, like, your normal group. Which, well, I don't have any examples for that other than, like, high school stereotypes.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, like, that's the only... Let's see. Seeing the kind of stuff they make high schoolers do in movies, I was like, did I go to a different high school than the majority of the world? Because this... Oh, well, then again, some of that stuff did happen. Because I remember talking to some people who hung out in different circles than me, and they were having all sorts of drama about who slept with who, who was dating who was cheating on who. Like, there was all sorts of drama. So maybe I just hung out with the wrong people.
I'm in the same boat exactly. And I do mean exactly. So I have no opinion. You're just, like, right about me as well.
We're the same person, actually.
Wow.
Wow. We are very similar in a lot of aspects, I would say.
Hmm. Aw, thanks. I just commented you as well.
Yeah, you just complimented both of us. That was sweet. That was smooth. That was really smooth, actually.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to get a good mark on podcasting. Something both normal to want and possible to achieve.
You're winning at friendship and podcasting. Wow!
Hooray!
Great job!
Gosh, that was such a flamboyant hooray. I'm really proud.
Yeah, you're doing great. All right. So you had, what did you think about when, let's say, SpongeBob and Squidward were fighting? Because when I was younger, I was totally Team SpongeBob, right? But then as I get older, I'm like, yeah, I probably would get annoyed with SpongeBob, but I kind of relate to Squidward now. Now I'm like, okay, yeah, he's being obnoxious. But at the same time, sometimes Squidward is just overly mean, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I definitely won't relate to Squidward exactly, because I just am into mean. That's my thing.
I don't think you could intentionally be mean if you tried to.
That was really nice, but I was joking, because on the internet you can get away with things like this. No one can double check me.
Until they dox you.
Oh gosh. That's the end.
This is the end. You're gonna be cancelled on the internet.
But about SpongeBob, you are dead on for me too. I actually had this the other week. I just happened to watch a specific YouTube video and realized then, for the first time, that I relate to the Squidward of this situation.
Yeah.
Not exactly, but more than I do SpongeBob. And hey, that's an observation that's happened to other people. I'm just surprised that it happened to me, like, last week, all at once.
I think as you get older and you start watching the media you watched as a kid, I can't exactly relate, because the media I watched as a kid was, like, Austin Powers.
That's so hilarious.
Yeah, I was 8 years old, and my dad was like, yes, this seems like an appropriate movie for children to watch. Thanks, Dad.
That's pretty cool.
But
although maybe not. I can't actually tell. I only have, like, a vague memory of Austin Powers. I haven't watched it in so long.
Well, let me tell you, it's not appropriate for an eight-year-old. But it didn't damage me or anything, and I came out weirdly sheltered despite that. For my parents being very, very open and chill people, like, did not hide anything from us, let us explore, do whatever we wanted. Me and my sister came out very sheltered, which is hilarious.
Oh, that is hilarious. I think, as well, I definitely had, like, a good influence on me from the amount of freedom I had. Freedom to do stuff like stay up late and then feel the consequences myself and go, oh, yeah. Wow, that sucked.
Yeah. I personally think natural consequences are, like, the best way to parent, because then the kid learns the consequences on their own and decides whether they're willing to take that. And then also, it doesn't make you, the parent, into the bad guy. It's like, okay, your choices have consequences, which is also a video game thing.
But then there also has to be a balance, because if you're too hands-off, then bad things happen that are, like, bad.
Can I quote you on that?
Yes.
Bad things happen that are bad.
Yeah, as opposed to regular bad.
Yeah.
But honestly, parenting is, like, the topic I know the least about. I have, like, some opinions based on my experience in one half of that interaction, but I don't think that I can say anything with much authority. But yeah.
That's why you're not a parent.
Mm-hmm. Hands-off parenting is a tool that can be used rather than an approach to follow on in everything. Yes. And it's got to be balanced with other stuff.
Yeah, and it's got to be balanced for your kid. And this has absolutely nothing to do with writing. So let's move on to a topic that you do know about, which is writing.
All right.
What got you into writing?
Something, probably, that's too far back for me to remember.
Fair. I mean, yeah, that's fair. I think my last guest mentioned that too, that he was like, yeah, I've just always been writing. And I guess for some people that is really true.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we could move that into what got you into writing poetry, or I guess that might have the same answer.
Oh, no. With poetry, it's just like recently some people I met in university kind of made it less mystifiable, made it a lot more like achievable looking. And I tried it out and very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, I feel like poetry, it feels sometimes like the way they present it in school makes it feel like it's very out of your reach and that it's very complicated, when in reality you can just be like, dog outside, dog go bark, woof. That's a poem.
You're making me cry. Stop. Oh gosh, slow down.
I'm an incredible poet.
It did go
poet.
Woof though.
It did go woof. I have a dog downstairs who will go woof if she hears me place a cup down too hard.
Oh my gosh. She's such a good boy.
She's okay. It's a family joke that she's mediocre.
Okay, I've had family jokes like that. That does sound like a really good family joke.
Yeah, because she's definitely not good. She doesn't listen, and she's very stubborn, and she likes to steal, and she tries to jump over the fence. But she's very cute and likes snuggles and loves her family, so she's like balanced. She's a mediocre. She's mediocre.
Gosh.
You got it. Okay.
Even still, even though, like, I have not met this dog, I would do anything for this dog anyways.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying. I still think they're the best boy.
Okay. I'm going to bring her next time, and I'll just hold her up for you. She's my Spanish professor. Anyway, so you write poetry. So what is it that you like about poetry?
Just like with any art, when you make something that, like, you enjoy, that you're happy with, it's a good thing. This is not a controversial opinion. This is actually maybe the most generic opinion I could have gave. But that's
you
my
made something you
situation.
Like? Ugh. How could you?
I know, I'm really out there.
You are. How could you do this? It's just so controversial.
Huh. I know it's controversial, but sometimes the dog go woof. That's our example poem this entire time now.
Yeah, that's going to be sometimes the dog go woof. Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes people place too much importance on having this like mind-blowing piece of media. We were talking about this before we started the recording. Like, for example, Detective Pikachu, I watched it last night. It wasn't a good movie. Definitely not. The acting was so flat, which I think was partially on purpose, but it was a fun movie. And that's sometimes all you need. Like, you just want to have fun with it. Like, I'm not going to go back and rewatch it, but it was fun while I watched it.
I completely agree. And even if we get specific on the terms, mm-hmm. it was not a high quality movie in the writing or other specific aspects, no. which is what you mean by good movie. But it still was an effective movie because its strength lied in the fact that A, real Pokemon, and B, Pokemon. Okay, it has like a lot of the same draw as Pokemon Stadium did in like, I think the 90s, because Pokemon Stadium, the N64 game, was literally, you love Pokemon, here are 3D Pokemon.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar also to the like the new Pokemon Snap game that came out, and it's like, mm-hmm. it's not like this incredible deep plot or like well-written characters or anything. It's literally just, hey, there's a Pokemon, take a picture of it, sweet. And that's exactly what the audience wants, right?
And that's exactly what I wanted and was delivered on back when I played the original. Gosh, I had the okay, hold on. Yeah, I do. I have the perfect analogy. I was afraid that I forgot it for a moment, but I still do have it. I realize this actually goes back to poetry, so I am backstepping a small bit. And you can handle it.
I can handle it.
Something good about poetry, something good about like when you're caring about effective rather than perfect quality, is that let's take a look at this analogy, which is going to hit for me, although possibly not everyone. Let's talk about speedrunning.
Yes.
Speedrunning YouTubers, like YouTubers who just talk about the speedrunning community, got really popular as of late as just like a song to listen to while falling asleep. So I think that this actually might be a better analogy than I might think it is. But I knew about speedrunning. I had opinions on speedrunning, and it really felt not for me until I heard a certain opinion from like a random YouTuber on a stream, which was, if you are not too into speedrunning, the only speedruns you hear about are the ones that like knock the world record down by a fraction of a second. But like, if you want to get into speedrunning, then for you, it's not going to be that, and it doesn't have to be. It's going to be more like, yeah, pro soccer players are playing pro soccer, but you're playing soccer to have fun. You can, I really like Ocarina of Time, and I kind of do know every inch of that game. And I could just like try to beat it as fast as I can and beat it in a day and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That's a good analogy.
And yeah, I also had an analogy in my analogy with soccer, and I think the soccer analogy was better than the speedrunning analogy.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people put so much emphasis on having like this miracle quality thing that's doesn't have any imperfections, that's like absolutely perfect in every single way. There's nothing problematic about the book. There's nothing boring about the book. And when in reality, it's such an objective thing.
Yeah, and it's always like, going to be a human product by human hands. Unless it's like
you can't make unproblematic media. You can't make completely always interesting media. Like my favorite book, I look on the reviews online and people are like, I hate it for the exact reasons I love it. Like it's yeah, I would agree with you. I think if you're doing it, as long as you're having fun, like, that's all that matters, unless you're making a living off of it, in which case you probably should cater to the whims of your audience a bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Gosh, needing to actually survive off your art is, in some ways, a limitation on your art. But that's a big thing that just popped into my head that I'm not sure I'm going to talk about. Or at least not yet, because, I had more things to say about poetry in this analogy. And that's actually one of the reasons poetry works for me. I suddenly was reminded of the fact that I'm currently being recorded and gotten a spike of anxiety. Let me just forget that fact and get back into conversation mode. The thing about poetry that makes it work for me is that I am making something I'm trying to make an effective product, not a good product, but one which is effective based on what my goals are and what the situation is. And the situation is I'm going to make something which I'm going to show my writing friends and enjoy and be proud of myself. And at best submit to a contest or magazine.
Yeah, you're not going to be living off of it.
Yeah, and I'm not ashamed to say that the poetry I have is just like a university student's poetry. I'm not aiming for a master's poetry.
I can't believe you. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
You sounded so sad.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I think sometimes just creating, just take it a little bit too seriously. Just have fun. Yeah. Do whatever.
Casual stuff is really important, which I think segues really well into the opinion on art, which I actually have some which I care about the most, which I think about the most. I don't have any grand plan of getting something published, getting something in.
I thought you were going to say I don't have any grandparents, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, okay, I was about to make a joke, but that's a little bit too dark. I'm not going to make that joke.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say there's nothing funny I can work off of this prompt. This is just sad. I'm
sorry. That wasn't a prompt, don't worry. Sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
Oh, it's all good. My nature as a comedian is to say something funny. I must apologize if I fail.
I mean, I feel like that should be what comedians do. If you say something sad, I feel like that kind of defeats the point.
Yeah. Unless you pull it off.
Unless you pull it off.
Oh yeah, there are comedians that make a really good art off being sad but funny.
That's true.
Yeah, all the audience is thinking one particular person. It's Bo Burnham. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, I was thinking Tig Notaro.
Oh man. I'm about to say something about casual stuff.
Yes, casual stuff.
I don't have any grand plan of getting published. I'm just doing something to enjoy it. So if I have a huge plot hole, which I realize I would really want to fix if this was going out for real, I have the option to say does this bother me? Or do I just want to let it be? The answer is that it really will bother me, but
you'll change it anyway.
I have complete power over how much I want to, how much work I want to put into it, how much I want to go over what I have, if I want to write something and edit it and make it shine, or if I want to just go on to something new. I'm doing what I enjoy most. And thus it is effective. It is effective at the task which it is meant to accomplish.
Make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. That's a nice thought. And then I was thinking about how I'm making something to publish and how much of a pain it is to edit.
Points in
that. I think you could relate to this, but Because I'm assuming you're like me, and it will bother you if something doesn't make sense, and so you go fix it. I think finding the solution when it ends up having, you end up having to like rework other parts of your let's call it your draft, is so annoying.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah.
It's just like, I sometimes, as much as I enjoy the process of writing, there are times when I'm like, I wish my story could just like poof onto the page. You're done.
But then what do you get to enjoy? Then what is your goal?
Oh, if it goes itself, you mean?
Yeah, if it magically went onto the paper itself, there's all that experience and enjoyment that you could have gotten from writing.
Very true.
Although something like, it's totally fair to say, man, I wish this particular really difficult chapter would poof itself onto the page, or that, like, you know, the really annoying editing process for a chunk of the book would poof itself onto the page. That's valid.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want my book to edit itself, or my audio drama to edit itself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's called hiring an editor, but... But I,
oh my gosh, we just invented a profession from scratch that already exists.
Oh my god.
We can make millions.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's a good comment. That's a good way to look at it. Because if your story just magically came out on the page, you didn't learn anything, you didn't get to have the fun of actually writing.
Mm-hmm. And if you are writing, I'm really hoping that you're doing something which you enjoy. Maybe
someone's
not all
just
the time.
Someone's just sitting over the computer, just be like, "God damn it, I hate this stupid goddamn thing."
And it's like adorable, like pining over each other scene, and he's just like crossing at the mouth.
Yeah, it's like this guy's like the scene's like, "Oh, I love you so much. You mean the world to me." And the person writing is just like,
I despise this so much. Oh my god.
I hate this. Yeah, why am I doing this to myself?
This hypothetical person who's just so anti-art, I don't think that we're pandering to any of our audience, because if anything, he would not listen to this.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know. This podcast doesn't take too much thinking in general. Well, I mean, when I'm talking. And I have to pay attention when I'm like going to do the editing, but like it doesn't take the same amount of brain power. So maybe this could be a chill out thing for the angry writer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that could be another podcast name, the angry writer.
Yeah, the angry writer.
So we talked a bit about poetry. We've talked about media, and we've talked a little bit about writing in general. But you like to write short stories, right? Shorter stories?
Yeah. And honestly, that's just because that's what's more achievable. Like, the benefit of it being more achievable does a lot of benefit.
Yeah, it's definitely highly recommend starting it with something small if you're just getting into writing. Makes things a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, A, what kind of genres do you write? And B, do you have any things you like to write in general, like any key themes, pieces of media, or your favorite tropes?
Oh, sure. That's a really good prompt. Man, the first thing that comes to mind is I write fantasy. All my daydreams are fantasy. I daydream all day about the most fantastical things, and I really love it. We talked about what got me into writing. It was the fact that for my entire life, I spend a portion of my day daydreaming every day. And I'm not like this idea machine. A lot of these ideas are like, let's kind of daydream. A slightly different spin on last week's daydream, It's not like I have years worth of good ideas, but I'm fascinated and enamored by fantasy writing. But at the same time, I really respect mystery.
Oh, you like mysteries?
I do. I find like the building of a mystery involves a great deal of planning, and there's stuff that's necessary. The beginning, middle, end are all, well, obviously mystery doesn't go the same way every time, but there's rules to make it work, or rules that you can subvert to do what you want to do. I've tried my hand at mystery a little bit. I think that it might be out of my reach, but I really respect it. I quite enjoy it as well.
I really like mystery, but I find in when you go to traditionally published mystery, it tends to be a lot of talk about when it comes to writing women, it's always like the women are, their personalities are they single? How single are they? What is the status of their boobs?
So the two sliders, the single slider and the boob slider. I like this.
Yeah. The more single you are, the bigger your boobs.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I find that pulls me out really fast. And also with mystery, a lot of like contemporary stuff, it just feels like you could see right through it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. But, not always, but sometimes it is.
Yeah, because sometimes if you're laying down the clues and you're having your reader figure it out along with you, that's great. But if I can open the book and be like, oh, this is the killer on like the first 10 pages, that's a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm. There is nothing less satisfying when there is a potential murder candidate. And well, when I say mysteries, I'm not just meaning murder. Yeah, murder candidate. Sorry, murderer suspect. Murderer, oh, wait, no, that's suspect. Just murder suspect. there's nothing worse than when there's like an obvious red herring to you, like, oh, this person's a jerk and this person has, you know, like, isn't really hiding the fact that they are malicious and like they have goals which go against the main character or the murder victim. If they were the murderer, there would be no loose ends already.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't just be them. That wouldn't be the most effective story given this setup. There's nothing less satisfying than when you think that and then that's the person.
Yeah, if you make your I think there are ways you can do it well, but if you're having like, it's like you open the page and you got this guy who's like very mean and cruel and very obviously does suspicious things or doesn't like the victim, and it's like, all right, I already know who killed.
Yeah, imagine if like Renaissance Disney movies tried to make it a twist that people like Jafar or Ursula turned out bad.
Yeah, like Ursula and like what's it called, the Little Mermaid. It's like, surprise, she's the villain. And it's like, yeah, we know. Yeah, I would agree. It's like, it's okay to have an obvious villain.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a mystery novel, you might want a little bit more mystery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but yeah, that was my next thing on mystery. When I say that I enjoy mystery, it isn't quite straight mystery. And oh man, I didn't mean like as a label of sexuality there.
I like mystery, but only when it's straight. All the men have to stand 5 feet apart.
Yeah, I'll be like halfway through a book, and two men start looking at each other, and
they weren't allowed to look at each other. It's like at a crime scene, and everyone has to like, all right, you turn around, don't you dare turn back around. Everyone put on your blindfolds. Jimmy's coming onto the scene.
Yeah. The detective leaves the room and, like, rings a bell saying, all right, other men are allowed in the room again. But what I meant to say is, rather than, like murder mysteries, thrillers, or crime, I'm quite interested in the ways mystery can be used in a fantasy, in your superhero medium. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the episode of a good show where the typically action-centered plot is a mystery with a twist. And, I mean, twists are fun. They can be a little bit overdone. They can be a little bit mismanaged. But a good twist is a good fun.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's kind of like how, I guess, romance is another one that's kind of like that. It's a genre that works better when intertwined with another. Like, it accentuates another plot.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried... Oh, go ahead.
And like mystery, it can go horribly, horribly wrong.
Yes, it can. It sure can.
Romance is one of those things. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Gosh, I have trouble relating to the romance parts of plots sometimes. Not because, yeah, like, I'm having any difficulty with romance myself, but because the most important thing to me, period, is communication and good communication.
I was just thinking that.
Yep. And that's, like, the one thing that you cannot have if you want to make your romance interesting.
Yeah, okay. I want to say something about that, because that frustrates me so much in so many shows and things. It's like, oh no, your partner went to get coffee with a friend. Now she's cheating on you because you can't handle your partner having friends. And it's like, mm-hmm. Why would you get together with someone if you couldn't trust them to go have coffee with people, go do things without you being with them constantly? It's this, or like these arguments, it's like, oh, she left for an hour and I don't know what she was doing. Obviously, she must be cheating on me. And it's like, why don't you just talk to her?
Yep. There's a very big difference between a romance which is interesting for, like, the big screen and a romance which, in real life, you yourself want to pursue and continue. There's different goals between, like, a writer and someone in a relationship.
Yes, I would agree. Like,
and that's just something that you gotta reconcile, but it's also something that can often lead to completely unrelatable romance.
Yeah, because if you look at a lot of Disney stuff, like, a lot of that is reflected. People in real life will try to find their one true love, their soulmates, but, or, like, expect that they're never gonna fight, but that's kind of how living with another person goes. I doubt you could live with someone for a year and not get annoyed with them once. I don't think that's possible.
If that is happening, then you're just not interacting enough.
Yeah, if that's happening, you haven't seen this person for like 6 months out of that year. It's like you see them maybe once a day and they live somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would.
Or you imagine them. I'm so sorry.
Or you, yeah, it's an imaginary roommate. You're just really lonely. You're like, this is my roommate. They could do nothing wrong. Like, you can't.
Oh my gosh, you're calling me out because I both have my enormous stuffed gorilla, which is always in my room,
yes,
and a skull. Not a real skull.
Oh,
I was just Hamlet one year for Halloween for my first year of university and had like a skull as a prop.
Nice.
And after Halloween, I just like put that skull on the top of one of my shelves, and ironically, it livened up the room. and their name is Rebecca. Piss off our mutual friend Rebecca.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, so just like Becca. Perfect. I'm mm-hmm. gonna tease her about that later.
Oh yeah, call her Rebecca too. She hates it.
Oh, I'm gonna call her Rebecca too now. Maybe I'll change her name to that in the Discord server.
She's gonna listen to this episode and be like, oh no.
The best part is I know that's exactly what she would say.
Yeah, we're spot on with this. Hi, Rebecca. Sorry.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, anyone who's listening who knows Becca knows exactly what we're talking about. She would say, oh no, word for word at those pauses. So moving back to talking about writing again, we're talking about romance and, I guess, tropes that we see in romance. Are there any tropes that you like to see in romance?
Yes. There's a lot of stuff which is overdone in media. This is not a controversial statement, but that
I like that you preface it with that. Maybe it that is.
Oh, maybe. I'm watching the wrong media. but I feel like I should call it breath of fresh air media. And I just did air quotes. No one could see it, but I just did air quotes, I promise. Breath of fresh air media that I enjoy because of how different it is from what I'm seeing the most, is something I really like with romance particularly. I absolutely love the guy who is in love so deeply with his girl boss right away. Like Morticia Adams, that kind of relationship.
Yes. Or I just love any relationship where, because you don't see it in media a lot. I listen to a lot of indie stuff because I don't like how a lot of things are portrayed in mainstream media. And so I love it when there's like just honestly a guy that loves his partner, because that's it's so odd to say, but like a lot of the times it doesn't feel like that, or just a guy who can express his emotions, you know?
Mm-hmm. For some reason, I didn't say this out loud, but the example in my head that I've been using so much is Captain America and Peggy Carter, specifically in the very first Captain America movie, because they have a scene where some adoring fan goes up and tries to kiss Steve Rogers, and Peggy Carter sees it and gets all in a huff. But they also do genuinely really like each other. And it feels like the only two ways a story can go in modern media is that either they have relationship difficulties and we see all the difficulties and barely any of the actual good stuff except in a montage, or they're really, really in love and the relationship would be really good. Perfect. Except one of them is like in a crashing spaceship or whatever, or a crashing jet. If I make that mistake, I'm worried that that's a mistake people will want to correct me on.
Like I told you, I have three listeners. You're good.
Oh, okay.
But no, yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I feel like romance in media is idealized, or if you look at the trope, like the "I'll die for you, I'll do anything for you" trope, like that's nice in media, but I feel like we overuse it, and in real life that's not healthy, right? You don't want someone to live for you. You want someone who has their own life, like, because also sorry, but it's really boring if your entire life just revolves around your love interest. You'll be a very boring person.
And then the other possible drawback is if someone's entire life revolves around another person, if that person has like a huge life outside of it, who very understandably might not sacrifice in the same way, then there's a pretty big inequality in the relationship, which in real life is a big problem.
Yeah, that's a huge, I guess, power dynamic. It's, I would agree, it's just not a good thing to aim for. Yes, it's sweet, it's great that you love your partner so much, but make sure you have a life outside of that, because then also it can feel unreciprocable. That's not a word, but like
it is a word if you say it really confidently enough. It can feel unreciprocable.
I don't think I can say it that. I don't think I can say that confidently. But it and also if your partner decides to leave, like, what do you have left? It's, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And that's why I absolutely love how, like, a media which portrays a good, healthy, functioning relationship with, you know, communication and other necessary parts of a relationship, which isn't in, like, immediate danger of being suddenly a widow situation where they actually, you know, this affects the plot and they're just in a relationship and functioning in the plot. How many movies have set up a really good relationship at maybe like the end of the first movie and beginning of the second movie is relationship troubles, or they straight up aren't together anymore off screen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think also it would be nice to see more on-screen communication about even just little things. Like, you never go to the movies and see this one character be like getting worked up about something that to the audience or to someone else may seem like really small. Like, maybe this person doesn't say thank you whenever the other character cooks. Like, but that can build up along with maybe not doing the dishes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, having them sit down or say, hey, I'm feeling really neglected right now, or setting boundaries like, hey, you need to do dishes, or I'm not comfortable with this, or I'm not ready to do this yet. Like, seeing that in media, I think would help a lot of people have healthier relationships.
Yeah, that's a huge and necessary part of the real world in lots of different types of relationships to different degrees. And it's never seen in media. And I mean, some media, it's understandable. The media about, like, you know, fighting off dragons to save the world is gonna that has less
You're always off fighting dragons.
Yeah. But some media doesn't have as much time to devote to its romantic side plot. In which case, a fairly good option in that situation is to not have a romantic side plot, but that might not happen. That's an entirely different topic. But if there's less time, even just a relationship where it feels realistic that is happening, or that it's at least communicated that these two people are having a very real and working relationship rather than just, I guess, infatuation beside each other.
Yeah, like, they're not just kissing. Because that's all a lot of romance is in these stories. It's like, hey, I hung out with you and I think you're hot. Let's make out.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that a lot in the James Bond movies. I watched them with my dad recently. It was a year ago. But like, the romance plots would come out of nowhere. It would be, I don't know, they'd be like hanging out and they're arguing the entire time. They have no chemistry at all or seemingly sexual attraction. And then out of nowhere, they're just making out. And it's like, guys, you're being hunted. Maybe do this later.
I have not seen the James Bond franchise, but that did make sense.
Would not recommend.
That does make sense to me. That is like, yeah, it's a really valid criticism of it. Because, hey, maybe in a different time period or maybe to certain demographics, that is the most entertaining story. Maybe to some demographics or people in different time periods, that would be the most entertaining thing or feel realistic. Because how... One second.
Lost your thought?
No, I can word this, but it's a tough one to word. Because different cultures have these languages and unsaid rules which cinema builds up. It can totally be true that to some people, because of these built up ways which fiction works, which we have in our modern culture as well, that is the most rousing and does make sense and flow. And then to me, it doesn't. The way cinema has shifted over the years makes some things not work anymore.
Yeah, like there are some things that you understand. Like, I think a lot of it is portraying how society was okay with relationships forming, when nowadays relationships and even platonic relationships work a lot differently than they used to. And I don't know if the media necessarily portrays that in a realistic way, but I guess a lot of media, the intention isn't realistic. It's for shock, right? Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wow, we suddenly have just under 10 minutes left. So that moved by really fast, mm-hmm. actually. I didn't realize it's been almost an hour already. So I have two last questions for you.
Are you ready?
Ready for your promotion?
Oh, gosh. No, you really built this up. So, I have no idea what's about to come.
Yeah. Do you have anything left that you would like to talk about that we haven't gotten to? Anything at all? Talk about Legend of Zelda. We could talk about more writing stuff.
Oh, man. People who know me, it's kind of obligatory that in any conversation that lasts more than an hour, I gush about Pokemon for like a solid chunk of it. That didn't happen, and that's strange.
We talked a little bit about it, but we didn't gush about it. So go right ahead.
Oh no, I don't have to do it now. But I just really like talking about Pokemon. It's
so do I, man. Love
it's,
Pokemon.
It's an interest. I don't think that there's anything I didn't get to because, really. Mystery, romance, and the way casual writing works is all I wanted to say. I also want to say something about how if you're really, really busy, writing can be hard to juggle in with. Actually, no, I don't have this to say. Maybe cut this.
I think that could answer my next question. Is there anything you'd like to say to other creators out there in terms of maybe people who are just getting started with writing or want to write, don't know where to start, or people who are too busy, et cetera, et cetera?
Gosh. I'd have more to say.
You can say a couple things. We have time.
I would definitely have more to say if I were able to successfully juggle these things. Because I'm struggling. I'm in the ongoing process of finding a way to work all of these things at the same time. But I'm trying my best, and I'm not beating myself up about it. I'm pressure, struggling with certain things. I really understand. It feels understandable, and I'm not going to... the thing I would recommend is go easy on yourself. I'm luckily in a situation where I have time, where I can just, like, if things are currently too difficult, I can wait it out or go at a really slow pace.
Mm-hmm.
But if that isn't your situation, I have less to say. But if it is, be patient. Things are... Put less pressure on yourself. The thing that I guess is helping me through this situation is the fact that I am putting a great deal less pressure on myself, and I can write at the pace which the only pace that I can through what I've got to deal with, which is slow as all balls. And I'm still enjoying it and still like making progress. And it's the fact that I'm able to put less pressure on myself, let things flow at the really slow rate which they naturally are, and not panic over that, is significantly helping the rest of my life and also struggling hobbies.
So you feel like mm-hmm. by taking away the pressure that you should be writing every day, you should be writing for this amount of time every day, you should be getting this amount done, that's helped you both mentally and actually helped you get more done.
Yeah. It's made writing continue to be something fun, And what you said is half the story. It's the other half is people are able to beat themselves up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with that, of course. But what I am is very, very aware of it when it's happening. And can usually, like, afterwards say, well, what can I do to make that? What can I do to reinforce the fact that everything is okay? How things are going is okay. And just being understanding towards myself is the solution I got.
Yeah. Treat yourself like a baby writer.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. I think people put, I've said this like 5 times throughout this episode, but I think people put a lot of emphasis on being professional. And even if you are trying to be professional and you want to get things done, if you don't have a set deadline or time you need to have this done by, there's no reason to rush. There will always be somewhere to publish your stuff. Your audience will still be there.
Mm-hmm.
And really, sometimes writing can be a chore. Sometimes if you're going to get published, it's going to be a chore. But the most important part really is you want to have fun. Your fans don't want you to be burnt out. You don't want you to be burnt out. Nobody wants you to be burnt out. So just be nice to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I think we covered everything very nicely. Do you have anything left to say?
Pokemon.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom.
Thank you. God, I feel like a Pokemon whose name is Pokemon and can only say its name.
I would love that. All right. Thank you very much for being on my show with me. It was fun. The hour just flew by.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. This has been an absolute blast.
Yay. All right. This has been another episode of In the Margins. If you like our show, check us out at RadioLaurier.com or our Instagram page at In the Margins Podcast for more episodes. And I don't believe you have any social media for me to promote.
No, I would continue like to be an absolute mystery.
All right, shadow. Perfect. You're just a complete mystery. Anonymous to the extreme.
I've come from the ether and now shall disappear back into it.
Excellent. Well, I guess I'll summon you from the void again next time whenever I need to chat with you. All right. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.